The Battle of the Morannon, when Aragorn's army faced off against Sauron's outside the Black Gate, is the culmination of the War of the Ring. So, what happened? Hi everyone, this is Robert. Welcome to In Deep Geek. On this channel, we dive deep into Tolkien's legendarium, as well as the worlds of A Song of Ice and Fire and The Witcher. Welcome. This is part 8 in a series of videos looking at the battles in the War of the Ring. The war raging in the background of the story of the Lord of the Rings. You can watch this as a standalone video, but if you'd rather start at the beginning, there's a link to the playlist in the description. So we finally reach the last proper battle of the War of the Ring, and let's pick up the action in the wake of the Battle of the Pelennor Fields. Sauron's plan there had been to prevent Gondor's allies from aiding it while he attacked Minas Tirith. That sort of nearly worked, inasmuch as the elves of Lorien and Mirkwood and the dwarves of Erebor couldn't come to help if they wanted to. They were busy defending their own lands. Rohan and the southern fiefs provided some aid, but not as much as they might have without Sauron's work to hinder them too. Still, Minas Tirith survived the assault. Sauron's army were pushed back and suffered significant losses, not just in terms of troops, but the Mumakil seemed to have all been vanquished, Grond abandoned, and so on. But most notably of all was, of course, the loss of the Witch King. An immensely powerful figure in his own right, he was also the general of Sauron's army and his man in the field, if you like. Sauron didn't get out much, so he needed someone to act for him. But if anything, the losses on the side of the Free Peoples were even greater, despite their victory. King Theoden and Steward Denethor were dead. Faramir, Eowyn and Merry were grievously injured and would take no further part in the war. The Rohirrim had lost a third of their number, and Minas Tirith itself had its gates blown off and Lower Tir set afire. What were they to do? They had earned a brief respite, but Sauron would come again, and there was the matter of the Ring, of course. And so the generals and leaders assembled to discuss their options. This became known as the Last Debate. Gandalf was there, along with Aragorn and Elrond's two sons, Eladan and Elrohir, Prince Imrahil and Éomer. And Gandalf started by acknowledging that Denethor had been right about one thing. The Free Peoples could not hope to prevail against Sauron's forces by strength of arms alone. They could regroup and refortify themselves, defending castle after castle, gaining victories here and there, but in the long run it would be to no avail. Sauron's forces were too strong. Which is a rather downbeat way to start a discussion about war plans. But he followed it up by saying that he did still hope for victory through the destruction of the One Ring. In particular, he knew Frodo was now in Mordor. He didn't think Sauron knew where the ring was, but suspected Aragorn had it after he showed himself through the Orthanc stone. So we read this. His, Sauron's, doubt will be growing, even as we speak here. His eye is now straining towards us, blind to almost all else that is moving. So we must keep it. Therein lies all our hope. This, then, is my counsel. We have not the ring. In wisdom or great folly, it has been sent away to be destroyed, lest it destroy us. Without it, we cannot by force defeat his force. But we must at all costs keep his eye from his true peril. We cannot achieve victory by arms, but by arms we can give the ring-bearer his only chance, frail though it be. As Aragorn has begun, so we must go on. We must push Sauron to his last throw. We must call out his hidden strength so that he shall empty his land. We must march out to meet him at once. We must make ourselves the bait, though his jaws should close on us. He will take that bait in hope and in greed, for he will think that in such rashness he sees the pride of the new ringlord. And he will say, "So, he pushes out his neck too soon and too far. Let him come on. And behold, I will have him in a trap from which he cannot escape. There I will crush him, and what he has taken in his insolence shall be mine again for ever." We must walk open-eyed into that trap, with courage, but small hope for ourselves. For, my lords, it may well prove that we ourselves shall perish utterly in a black battle far from these living lands, so that even if Barad-dûr be thrown down, we shall not live to see a new age. But this, I deem, is our duty, and better so than to perish nonetheless, as we surely shall if we sit here. and know as we die that no new age shall be. It's a plan. They are to march on Mordor, judging that Sauron will assume they have the ring, tempt his forces out to confront them, and hope that this frees the way for Frodo and Sam to make it safely to Mount Doom. They expect to die. The others swiftly sign up to the plan and agree that they need to move quickly. This isn't about actually having an army or tactics that could take on Mordor, so much as distracting Sauron's attention. They judged that in 2 days' time they would have enough extra soldiers from the southern fiefs to defend Minas Tirith, and the victors of the Pelennor Fields would have time to briefly rest before setting out again. In total, they could muster 7,000 troops. They marched east out of the city on the 18th of March, crossing over the River Anduin, turning north at the crossroads. Aragorn left some archers there to protect his rear and proceeded along the border of Mordor through Ithilien. In keeping with their plan, there was no pretense of secrecy here. At Gandalf's prompting, they literally trumpeted Aragorn's presence as the King of Gondor. A couple of days into their march, there was an attempted ambush by some orcs and easterlings, but that was relatively easily dealt with. Then on the 23rd, Aragorn ordered all the faint-hearted, all those who didn't fancy marching to their almost certain death, to peel away from the main force and head west instead to liberate the fortified island of Cair Andros. Remember that? Sauron sent a force earlier to secure that northern crossing over the River Anduin and push on into Rohan to intercept the Rohirrim en route to Minas Tirith. Théoden avoided them by going through the Druidan forest, so the orcs were still there, loitering between Gondor and Rohan, and Cair Andros needed reclaiming. Around 1,000 volunteered to do that, leaving Aragorn with probably a bit under 6,000 to take to the Black Gate, which they reached on the 25th of March, after a last dark night encamped to the northwest of the Black Gate. At which point, let's do a quick bit of geographical scene setting. The Black Gate stood at the northwest corner of Mordor, completely spanning a gap or pass between two high cliffs. It was the only way in or out of Mordor, save Cirith Ungol, of course, for many miles. Behind it lay the Valley of Udun, and in front, two spurs of rock thrust out on either side of the gate, topped by strong fortifications, the Towers of the Teeth. Between the towers and stretching out northwest, Tolkien writes that there lay like a moat a great mire of reeking mud and foul-smelling pools. And beyond that, huge piles of refuse, mud, rock and earth left over from various building projects. In the absence of any better defensive position, Aragorn positioned his army on two of those slag hills, then rode forward into the mire of reeking mud with his honour guard. Basically the main named characters in the army, Gandalf, Éomer, Imrahil, Eladan, Elrohir, Legolas, Gimli and Pippin, to challenge Sauron. Through all this, Sauron's forces had remained quiet and largely hidden, though as Aragorn and his men approached they could see the 8 remaining Nazgul on their winged fell beasts hovering above the Towers of the Teeth, waiting. The battle was not quite yet to be joined, though. Aragorn's challenge prompted the arrival of the Mouth of Sauron. I've done a whole other video on who he is, if you're interested. His role here was ostensibly to treat with Aragorn on behalf of Sauron, but really it was to taunt Sauron's foes. Sauron will have seen what size force Aragorn had brought with him, and known that victory was all but assured. The Mouth of Sauron offered a deal that would never be accepted, ceding all land east of the Anduin to Sauron, and all land between that and the Misty Mountains are to be vassals. Aragorn and Gandalf between them sent him back on his way. Incidentally, the movie version of this scene has Aragorn beheading the Mouth of Sauron. That doesn't happen in the books. However detestable we may find him, the Mouth of Sauron is an ambassador with rights of free passage, and Gandalf explicitly guarantees his safety. Anyway, after he had gone, the Black Gate opened and Sauron's forces poured out, and not just from behind the Black Gate. An army of Easterlings had been stationed just out of sight to the east of the Black Gate, and orcs in caves and crevices on the hillsides themselves scrambled down. Aragorn swiftly solidified his defensive position. As Tolkien writes, little time was left to Aragorn for the ordering of his battle. Upon the one hill he stood with Gandalf, and there, fair and desperate, was raised the banner of the Tree and Stars. Upon the other hill, hard by, stood the banners of Rohan and Dol Amroth, White Horse and Silver Swan, and about each hill a ring was made, facing all ways, bristling with spear and sword. But in the front, towards Mordor, where the first bitter assault would come, there stood the Sons of Elrond on the left, with the Dúnedain about them, and on the right, the Prince Imrahil, with the men of Dol Amroth, tall and fair, and picked men of the Tower of Guard. The Free Peoples were essentially surrounded and vastly outnumbered. We don't have an exact count for Sauron's forces, but it was at least 60,000. The Boggy Mire gave the host of the West some protection. It slowed the Orcs' advance so much that many of them stopped completely, drew bows and rained fire down on their enemies instead. A company of hill trolls wasn't so easily slowed down, though, and they slammed into the Free Peoples first. Overhead, the Nazguls swooped over the battle, spreading fear and doubt. Note again the difference to the movie version here. There is no "for Frodo" or charge at the enemy lines by Aragorn across a dusty plain. This was not about victory for the Free Peoples, or even survival. It was about eating up as much time as possible while distracting Sauron's attention, so they would wait for Sauron to attack. And attack Sauron's army did. This was the dark moment when hope was slim. Tolkien skillfully cuts away from the action at this moment in the book, moving to Frodo and Sam for three whole chapters, because that's where the really important action is taking place. Where had they got to while that battle was going on? Would they get to Mount Doom and destroy the ring in time? Had Gandalf and Aragorn's gambit worked? We know the answers to that, but first-time readers wouldn't have, adding to the tension. In fact, we had last seen Frodo and Sam in the book at the end of the Two Towers, with Frodo captured in Cirith Ungol. What hope was there? But let's return to the battle, because for Tolkien, hope is often shown by the arrival of the Great Eagles, and they arrived now, taking on the Nazgul in the skies over the battlefield. Still, Sauron's main forces had now reached Aragorn's and were cutting them down mercilessly. Suddenly, though, something shifted. The Nazgul turned in the air, and as one flew back towards Mount Doom. Frodo had put on the One Ring, and they were racing to get back in time. With them gone, Sauron's army lost heart briefly. The fear and power that had driven them on was lifted and focused elsewhere, and Aragorn's forces pressed their sudden advantage. Bigger things were happening at the cracks of Doom. The Ring had now been destroyed. Gandalf lifted up his arms and called once more in a clear voice, "Stand, men of the West, stand and wait. This is the hour of doom." And even as he spoke, the earth rocked beneath their feet. Then, rising swiftly up, far above the towers of the Black Gate, high above the mountains, a vast soaring darkness sprang into the sky, flickering with light. The earth groaned and quaked. The towers of the Teeth swayed, tottered, and fell down. The mighty rampart crumbled. The Black Gate was hurled in ruin. And from far away, now dim, now growing, now mounting to the clouds, there came a drumming rumble, a roar, a long echoing roll of ruinous noise. "The realm of Sauron is ended," said Gandalf. "The Ringbearer has fulfilled his quest." And as the captains gazed south to the land of Mordor, it seemed to them that, black against the pall of cloud, there rose a huge shape of shadow, impenetrable, lightning-crowned, filling all the sky. Enormous it reared above the world. It stretched out towards them a vast, threatening hand, terrible but impotent. For even as it leaned over them, a great wind took it, and it was all blown away and passed. And then a hush fell. The captains bowed their heads, and when they looked up again, behold, their enemies were flying, and the power of Mordor was scattering like dust in the wind. Orcs and other creatures of Sauron were broken and directionless. They fled or turned on one another, or threw themselves into dark crevices where they could find them. Some of the Easterlings and Haradrim held firm for a time, but soon many of them turned too. Sauron's dark rule was over. The ring had been destroyed. Fighting carried on for days, weeks, even years, rooting out all those still loyal to Sauron in Mordor, or in the battles of the north that we looked at last time. But the plan had worked perfectly, distracting Sauron and tempting him into emptying his forces out to face Aragorn at just the right time to open the way for Frodo and Sam. A victory, and a decisive one, but through humility, fortitude and pity, not force of arms. Of course, there is one more battle we should talk about before the end, in the Shire. A footnote in the grand scheme of things, but an important one. My War of the Ring playlist is on the left of your screen now, or if you'd like to see more videos on other aspects of the world of J.R.R. Tolkien and the Lord of the Rings, please click on the link to the playlist in the centre of your screen. Thanks for watching. That's all for this time. I'll see you again soon.